It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to Let's Talk. I am your host, Brian Pettaway. Thank you so much for joining me this morning and every Sunday morning from 10 to 11. I always look forward to talking to my radio family on Sundays. And today, I have a guest that's going to help me speak to you also. As I mentioned 2 weeks ago, October represents Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And, the guest that I have fell prey to that years ago and has since then turned her life completely around and turned what was a tragic, ugly situation into a business that has helped thousands of women across the country. Her name is Cetra Stevenson, and she is the founder of the company You're Worth It. She's got apparel, she's got a magazine, she's got a podcast, and she's doing her thing. So I've got her today, and I'm going to let you know up front, her story is graphic, it's violent, and it's disturbing. But it's the kind of thing that goes on behind closed doors that we're not aware of. This one, actually, everyone was aware of because it made news. But beside that, women are going through this kind of thing, and men, on a daily basis. So get the kids out of the room, pay attention, because she does have an incredible story to tell, and I cannot wait to sit down with her so she can share it with us. I've also got the Petty here today, and as you know, the Petty is stoked because it is NFL season, but he's also going to talk about the MLB baseball and how the Orioles faltered, unfortunately. He's going to be talking about other things. Who knows what the Petty's going to talk about? Who knows what's going to come out of his mouth? But it's always going to be interesting. And of course, you've got me. I'm going to start off with some news and some commentary, and then my Sunday fun facts, which has caused some controversy this week. A lot of people are on me because it seems I've ruined their shrimp moments. I gave a Sunday fun fact last week about the anatomy of the shrimp, and people are not happy about it. They truly are not. They're truly not happy about it. And I'm sorry, but not sorry. It's a Sunday fun fact. I won't do it again, though, I promise you. And it's because I think, you know, the shrimp karma has gotten me. I think you guys have wished bad luck on me. And I really did have one of these weeks where things just went from bad to worse. You ever have one of these weeks you think you get over one thing, and then something else comes up, and then something else comes up. And you look, by the end of the week, when I thought I'd gotten over every hump, my brakes start grinding. You know what I mean? So I got to take my Lexus in to get my brakes replaced. And of course, it fell on Friday the 13th. So for all of you shrimp eating fanatics who sent their shrimp eating gods to cast their bad karma against me, I hope you're feeling great. Because, you know, in spite of it all, I'm still feeling pretty great. And I've got lots to talk about. So let's get right to it. All right. In Baltimore, another shooting took place at an HBCU. This time at Bowie State University, on the heels of the shooting at Morgan State University. What the hell is going on? Homecoming has now become something that people are starting to fear, and that is not what homecoming is supposed to be about, especially at an HBCU. I'm really happy that the Baltimore Police Department has already arrested one suspect and charged him with multiple counts of attempted murder. What I'm not happy about, and what I'm absolutely disgusted about, is that it is another young black minor. They arrested him in D.C. last Thursday and charged him in the connection of the mass shooting that injured five on the campus of Morgan State University. His name will not be released because, like I said, he is a minor. He's only 17 years old. But he wasn't alone. The Baltimore police have also issued an arrest warrant for a second suspect, Chauvin Williams, who's 18, in connection to the homecoming week shooting that locked down the Morgan State campus for several hours. Now, they consider Williams to be armed and dangerous. And you know, the irony's not lost on me that both of these young men are at an age where they should be either already at an HBCU or prepping to attend one. And it's just sad to me, it's very sad to me, that this is the choice that they've made in their lives. As of today, there are still no arrests that have been made in the case of the shooting at Bowie State, but I will keep you posted. On the international front, as far as news goes, the big story is Israel, Gaza, and Palestine, and Hamas. There was a massacre in Gaza of innocent Israeli women and children. They were brutally killed, raped, kidnapped, babies were decapitated, all kinds of horrible stories, all war crimes, by the way. And the big question is, how deeply does the U.S. get involved in this? Now, they are allies of ours. We have supported them financially for many, 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 many years and continue to do so. And there's been an outpouring of anger and sympathy, obviously, for the Israeli people. However, there is another side to this, and that is Palestine. Now, Hamas is supposed to be freedom fighters of Palestine that go to war with Israel because Israel supposedly moved them out of their territory and have been fighting Palestine for years. So it goes back and forth. But what one cannot abide is the atrocities that have been perpetrated against these innocent women and children. You know, I don't care what your stance is on Palestine or Israel. There is no cause for raping, decapitating babies, huddling people into small areas and shooting them down like dogs. I can't abide by that. And it gets complicated for the United States because Hamas is supported by, funded by, supposedly Iran. And Iran, obviously, is in bed with the Soviet Union. Now, remember, we still have Ukraine going on with the Soviet Union that the U.S. has supported financially, given millions, billions of dollars worth of military equipment to. And we're just stretched way too thin. I don't know how we can get involved in this situation, because there's definitely going to be retaliation by the Israeli government and the Israeli military. And I just don't know how far we can get involved in all of these wars. This country, we just can't do it. I don't know how that's done. So it becomes very complicated because there is a very large financial investment in Israel by the United States. So we have to protect that investment. And it's just, listen, we almost, we are only a couple of weeks away from damn near defaulting due to the debt ceiling, right? We just don't have the money to keep doing this. It leaves us far too vulnerable for China, North Korea, Russia, and anyone else who wants to blast us out of the water. So, you know, we have to look out for ourselves. We have to look out for ourselves first. And I hate to say that, but, you know, it is what it is. You can't help anyone when you can't help yourself, right? And I just think we're giving away far too much already. We're stretched way too thin already. This Ukrainian war, which was not necessarily our war, and I understand the importance and the strategy behind it, but how much do we give and to how many people do we give it before we are tapped out as a country ourselves and then we're just as vulnerable as everyone else? I mean, I don't really know how deep this well really goes, but I know it's not infinite. There is an end to it. So how much do we give, for how long do we give it, and to how many people do we give it before we become as vulnerable as everyone else? And I know I sound like a Republican right now in that regard, but yo, even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? We just have to be very careful. Okay, it is time for our Sunday fun facts. I'm starting to really love these things, man. But today, in the interest of time, I'm only going to give you three. And the very first one is that you actually lose a large percentage of your taste buds while on an airplane. Now, this might explain a lot about those less than stellar in-flight meals, or why you find yourself craving, you know, the saltiest foods while in the sky. Sunday fun fact two. You probably already know that snails are pretty slow creatures. Like, they're the slowest creatures probably that you'll ever see. But did you know that they also take the longest naps? One nap for a snail can last up to 3 years. So the next time somebody calls you the laziest thing on earth, just be reassured that you absolutely are not. And the last Sunday fun fact today is that there is only one country on earth without mosquitoes. That country is Iceland. Its low temperatures make it impossible for mosquitoes to breed. So if you get tired of mosquitoes wherever you are, you can always go to Iceland where you'll not find any. All right, let's shift gears here and get into today's topic, which is domestic violence. Again, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And in lieu of that, I have another guest today. Now, I will say that I had another guest lined up other than this one. That guest was someone who is right now in Jessup serving 40 years with the possibility of parole in 10. She shot her husband 5 times. And I had that all set up. But apparently, she's been advised not to do it because it could jeopardize her parole opportunities. And I fully understand. I'm just sorry that I couldn't bring that to you guys. But during that time, I had someone else reach out to me and left a message on Messenger. Her name is Cetra Stevenson. And in hearing the first week's show, she reached out to me and said that she would love to be able to help any persons that she could that were listening to my show, and she would love to be on it. So I reached back out, and we set up this interview, and it's a great one. I mean, I love the fact that she's so willing to help. She went through a horrible situation that was actually on the news, where her husband was on the lam after trying to kill her, thought that he had. And so now we have Cetra Stevens here. She has, from this situation, founded a company and has apparel, has written a book, and has just turned her life completely around from the situation. And I'm so happy that she has. She's got a fresh start in life, doing very well. So people, please help me welcome Cetra Stevenson to the show. Good morning, Cetra. How are you this morning? Thanks for joining me. How are you feeling?
I am doing great. Good morning.
I really appreciate you being on this morning. You know, this month represents Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the month of October, something that you're very familiar with, unfortunately. Tell me your story and how you got to where you are today. How did all this all start for you?
Oh, wow. Well, back in 2007, on September the 7th, my divorce was final. And 2 days later, that Sunday, my ex-husband, he broke into my house.
Okay.
So I was gone for the weekend, you know, because our divorce was final that Friday. So we were going through divorce proceedings. So it was like no big surprise. It was like almost a year for the divorce proceedings to go through. So when I went and we got the divorce, he didn't show up.
Okay.
So the judge had just granted the divorce because she said there's no reason for her to keep rescheduling us because, you know, my ex-husband, he wouldn't show up. He kind of thought it was a game. So the judge said, you know what, I'm going to just go ahead and grant it because, you know, no need to keep wasting each other's time because he's not really taking it serious.
Right.
So I walked out of the courtroom and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I am a divorced woman. So I called my ex-husband that Friday and I said, you know, let's meet somewhere, you know, in public, because during our marriage, the reason why we got a divorce, because there was violence throughout the marriage.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, I know the end result of this, but were there signs? Was there violence? Was there abuse physically throughout the marriage?
Oh yes, it was abuse throughout the marriage. One time he had put a gun on me and held me hostage in the room for 2 days.
Jeez.
So you would think, okay, that's a sign. You know why I didn't get out then?
Right.
You know I did go to the police station and, you know, the police came, they arrested him, but I didn't press charges.
Why?
So he was out the same day, yes.
Why, were you afraid to press charges or did your heart just say, I love this man, I'm not going to press charges?
A little bit of both. Okay. I was a little bit of afraid. And then a part of me was thinking, okay, well, maybe he'll change. You know, I was making excuses for his behavior. I was like, okay, well, his grandmother had just passed away. So I was thinking, okay, well, maybe he's just going through something and that's why he did it.
What about the people in your family, the men in your family? I don't know if you have brothers or if your dad was still alive at the time or is today. But did you share anything with anybody? Was anybody aware in your family of what was going on?
Well, I have two brothers. I'm an older brother and a younger brother. But it had gotten to the point where I didn't want to tell anyone.
Okay.
Because, you know, we were separating a lot through our marriage. You know, I'll leave, then he'll say he's sorry, then I'll go back. So it was almost like an embarrassment. Like, I didn't want people to know really what was going on. And then if I keep running back to my family, if they were to do something, they were going to say, okay, look, she's going right back to him. So I really didn't want to get them involved in what was really going on. And he knew it too.
Okay.
And he knew, like, my brothers really wasn't gonna do anything per se.
Oh, all right. Were they afraid of him as well? Were they afraid of him as well?
I don't think that they were really afraid of him. I really didn't tell them much that was going on, but I think he had that much control over me where he had my family believing that anything that I would say wasn't the truth. Like, not to believe me.
Wow.
So, for instance, I have two older children. They're not by my ex-husband.
Okay.
So when me and him will have an argument, he'll go as far as calling my other kids father, mother, so their grandmother, and talk bad about me. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, why are you even calling their grandmother? So he had everybody believing pretty much what he said. So it got to a point where I got tired of really defending myself. I was just like, okay, let him say what he want to say. I'll keep it to myself. Nobody will ever know.
Did you ever at any point start to blame yourself or make yourself feel like you were responsible for the turmoil that was going on in the relationship or his violent streaks?
At some point I did, because, you know, there was a lot of physical abuse, but it was that mental abuse. So he will always, you know, tell me, you know, no one would want you. You're ugly. You have three kids. So he would always say those things to me, where at some point I was really starting to believe it.
Right. And that was the point I was trying to get across. There's so much mental going on before or during the physical that you don't even recognize that what's going on is abnormal, because you almost feel like you deserve it at some point, I think. And I think that is one of the biggest deterrents in women reporting things like this or pressing charges.
Yeah. I mean, because I could have pressed charges on him so many times, but, you know, I didn't. I was just thinking, okay, well, maybe he'll leave me alone. At some point, I was just really hoping that he'll just find someone else and leave me rather than me having to leave him.
When was the first time he was violent with you? Do you remember that time?
Oh, wow. The first time, I don't know if it was the first time, but I remember one time we had got into an argument and he punched me in my nose. He broke my nose.
What?
I remember running to the neighbor's house, two doors down, and the police came, and I didn't press charges again. But yeah, I remember he broke my nose.
So the
and
police,
I still stayed with him.
So the police come, and they see that you have a broken nose or a bloody nose, and they still don't arrest him for assault? Like, nothing? What did you tell the police?
Well, he did go to jail, but okay. He got back out the same day. So they did arrest him. I was calling the police so many times at our home. I remember one of the police officers told me to leave. The police officers told me to leave because he's afraid that if he comes back to our home, it's going to be a homicide.
Wow.
So this was years before he actually tried to kill me.
Okay, so fast forward. You guys, how long were you guys married, you two?
We were married 5 years.
5 years. And throughout the entire 5 years, there was physical and emotional abuse, correct?
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yes, it was.
Was there infidelity involved as well?
Yes, it was. Well, it was really on both, because we were separated a lot.
Okay.
So when we would separate, that was our way of saying, okay, we could do what we want, but then we'll get back together.
Okay. And during the time you guys were separated, was he stalking you or was he trying to get you back? I mean, did he just break clean and let it go and you guys just came back together? Or how did that work?
Oh, no. He was stalking me for sure. Now, we worked at the same place.
Okay.
So I know. And he was a manager at the place where we worked. So he knew that there were no cameras in the garage where we parked. So I worked the afternoon shift, so I would get off around 2 in the morning. So it was times I would come out and I would come to my car and he'll just run up on me. One time he ran up on me and he said, I can kill you right here and no one would even know. And I had my cell phone in my hand, so he snatched my cell phone. So I go home later that night. I'm on my way home. I go and my daughter, she opens the door and my cell phone was broken into pieces, put in a Ziploc bag, and he put it on my porch.
All right. So listen, Setra, I'm not a woman, obviously. I've never been in this situation, but I'm trying to get into the head. Like, what goes on in your mind when you know you're living with a man that has threatened to kill you, has told you he can kill you if he wants to kill you, and you do you just not believe that what he's telling you is true? Like, what goes in your mind that makes you stay? I'm trying to figure that part out.
It was several times that I would leave. I had a restraining order on right. him at the time when he came up on me in the garage. And he just said no one would know. So even with the restraining order, I felt like that still didn't protect me.
Okay.
Because he could still do what he wanted to do. So at some point, I was just really trying to be nice, be on his good side, and just hoping he just would just leave me alone.
Okay. Wow. Now, this is during separation you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes. I had separated. I had moved out of the home. I'm living in a separate home. We're not even living together.
Okay.
At this time.
And how many times did you guys do that?
We separated through the divorce. Sometimes I will go over to my aunt's house and maybe stay a few days and then go back. But when we separated, I never went back. So
I got you.
I would say maybe like in 2005.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were separated for a while. So I had my own place to stay. I left him in the home that, you know, that we had built together. And yeah, we wasn't even together. He was more violent when we wasn't together.
Gotcha. 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 And do you guys have any kids together?
Yes, we have a younger son. He's now 18.
Okay. Was he afraid of his father at the time? Did he witness any of this stuff before the final thing that happened? Was he afraid of his dad?
When we separated, my youngest, he was two.
Okay.
So he really didn't know what was going on. But my oldest two, they witnessed it all. Because now that they're adults, they told me, you know, a lot of things that they saw that I didn't know that they were actually, you know, seeing. So I'm thinking that I'm staying for the kids in a way.
Right.
But thinking I'm hiding it from them. But when they got older, I found out that they saw a lot of things that happened.
So besides the police, who did you confide in? Is there anybody that you spoke to and that you were just completely open and honest about that was going on in the relationship?
My aunt knew, because when we would separate, I would go, you know, to her house. And I wrote a letter. It was probably in like 2005. I know it was a few years before he actually tried to kill me. I wrote a letter and I said, if anything happens to me, my ex-husband, he did it.
Oh, wow.
So I pretty much wrote like my goodbye letter.
Hmm.
And I gave it to my my oldest kid's grandmother. I gave it to her.
I can't even imagine what that. So you've already resigned yourself to the fact that this man's going to kill you.
Yes.
And you're just waiting.
Yeah, I was just so scared. I didn't know what to do. I mean, if I be nice, if I leave, it was like whatever it is I'm doing, I put the restraining order. I called the police. It was like it still didn't stop him. It was, and he even said, like, I can do stuff to you and no one would ever know.
All right. So at the time when everything, take me through the last and most violent episode where this all happened and it was the end of it.
So when I left out the courthouse that day, because like I said, he just thought it was just a joke, the divorce proceedings. I mean, I really think he got on that judge's nerves,
right,
to the point where she just was like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and grant it because he's not showing up. So that's when I called him and when I wanted to tell him that we were divorced, I wanted it to be in a public place.
Okay.
So I said, let's meet, let's have dinner and let's talk. So we did. We sat, we talked, and I told him, well, you know, our divorce is final. And I'm thinking everything was okay. And I told him why. I say, well, I didn't even know that she was going to grant it. And it's just that's something that the judge did. But we shouldn't be surprised because we're going through this divorce proceeding anyway.
Right.
So I'm thinking everything was fine. We had dinner. I was like, okay, my youngest was two at the time. I said, we can arrange something, you know, for our youngest son, you know, and I'm thinking, like, everything is okay. We had a great conversation. We left dinner. So that weekend, I had already planned to go out of town with my aunt. So me and my aunt, we went out of town. And so I noticed that my ex-husband, he just was calling me throughout the weekend. But I'm over in Canada because this happened in Detroit. So Canada is right across the
border. Hop, skip, and jump, right.
Right, exactly. So and back then, you know, the cell phone's not like how they are now. So the cell phone wasn't working. I didn't have great reception.
Okay.
So he's calling. So I'm just wondering, okay, like, why does he keep calling me? So that Saturday, we came back across on the U.S. side, me and my aunt, and we went and we had dinner. And so he called again, and so he asked where we're at. And I told him, well, hey, we're here at this restaurant. So me and my aunt walking out the restaurant, and he's standing right there at the door as we come out.
Okay.
And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, like, what is wrong with him? I believe he probably thought I was with another guy.
Right.
But if I was, who cares? We're not together.
Okay.
So he just thought it was funny. So he looked and he saw it's my aunt. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, I can't do this anymore. So I called one of his best friends and I told his best friend. And I told him, look, this is what he's doing. He's showing up where I'm at. I don't know, you know, why he's doing this. We're not together anymore. So I did tell his best friend. Okay. So me and my aunt, we go back over to Canada, and then we come back home on Sunday. So Sunday, he's calling me, and he asks, am I home? And I'm like, no, I'm not home. But at this time, I'm actually pulling up in my driveway. And I say, no, I'm not home. And so something just told me, okay, something just don't seem right.
Right.
So when I get to my house, I go through the side door, and I know I locked the screen door because I was told on Saturday that my ex-husband came and took my two-year-old out the house, just took him with him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So my oldest told me that. So I really didn't think nothing of it because I'm like, okay, yeah, he's with his dad. Okay, no big deal. So on Sunday, when I go in the house and I go into my bedroom, now I still have my bag and I still have my cell phone in my hand. So I go in my room to put my stuff up, and then I turn around and my ex-husband is standing right in my doorway of my bedroom.
Jeez.
So I am like shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm talking about scared. Like, cause I'm thinking like, how did he get in here? Was he in here? Did he break in? I don't know. I didn't know where he came from. So I look at him and I'm just like, okay, well, you know, what do you want? So I remember him closing my bedroom door and locking it. So at this time I'm like, okay, something's not right. So I turn over, I try to turn away from him and try to press 911 because I still have my cell phone in my hand.
Okay.
So he grabs the cell phone and throw it up against the wall so it just shatters to pieces.
Right.
So I think this time the kids, because we have a basement, so I'm thinking the kids hear the scuffling because now he's hitting me.
So now your kids are in the house at this time?
Yeah, we're in the house in my bedroom.
I mean, the kids are. The kids are in the house.
Yes, the kids are in the house, okay. Two of my kids. So he brought my two-year-old back, and then my 12-year-old was there. And then I had a cousin that was there that weekend, too.
Okay.
So they're in the basement playing video games.
Right.
So they hear, you know, I guess they hear us fighting upstairs. So they run upstairs, and good thing that I had one of those bedroom locks where you could just stick a coin and unlock it.
Okay. Okay.
See, I never knew that, but my 12-year-old obviously did because, and thank God he did, right?
Right.
Because
right.
He opened the door. And I think when he opened the door, it kind of startled my ex-husband because he knew that he locked the door.
Right.
So now my 12-year-old, my 2-year-old, and then my cousin, they're at the doorway looking like, what's going on? So I remember my ex-husband, he pulled the knife out of his pants. I remember he had khaki pants. And it was a flip knife. And he put it up against my neck. And he told the kids, y'all stand there and watch me kill your mother.
What?
Yes. So they're in shock. I'm in shock. I got a knife up to my neck. And he's like, stand there and watch me kill your mother. So all I can do is just look and see their faces. So I grab the knife from my neck. And I'm telling the kids, run, go get help. So my ex-husband, he pulled the knife through my hand. As I'm ripping the knife from my neck, he just slid it out my finger. So all my fingers got cut, right? Until this day, my nerve is still cut. So I still feel the little tingling.
Wow.
Fingers tingling, I'm feeling in my fingers. So I'm telling the kids, run. But guess what? They stood there because he told them.
Stand there.
So they're in shock. They're scared. So now he's just stabbing me. I'm on the bed. He's on top of me. He's stabbing me. So I remember him choking me. At some point, he started choking me. And he choked me till I passed out. And I tell people till this day, I heard God's voice.
Right.
And God said, not today. Your kids will not watch you die. Not like this.
Right.
And so I was able to get up, and I was trying to, you know, run out the house. So as I'm running out the house, I had on like a tank top. It was like a sleeveless top. So he's grabbing me by my shirt, just still trying to like stab me in my arm and in my back. So we're running out the house through the side door. And I remember when we get outside, his car is running. And now his door is open. So now he's trying to push me in his car. And I'm saying to myself, if I get in this car, I know I'm dead because I know he's not going to take me to the hospital. So by this time, now all the neighbors is out because the kids did run out and was getting help at right. this time. So did now he, the neighbors is out.
Did he think mm-hmm. when you passed out, do you think he thought you were dead and he just left? Is that why his car was running and his door was open?
I don't know. I think so. But okay. when we get to the hospital, I find out. So now he fled the scene. So where we're outside, he ended up letting me go. He fled the scene. I ran across the street to the neighbor house, banging on the door. And I just remember just passing out on their yard. Wow. So I'm in the hospital now. And so I have police guarding my door. So I'm wondering, like, okay, where is my family? What's going on? And I find out then that it's a police investigation that he fled the scene. So he's on the run.
Okay.
But I hear my 12-year-old son in the other room. So I'm like, okay, well, I know my family is here. And the doctors came to me and had me sign some papers. So I had to sign papers because they're putting stitches in my son's face. So wow. at the time, going back to what you were saying, so at the time when he choked me and I passed out, I found out that my 12-year-old had jumped on his back and said, "Get off my mom, she's not breathing."
Oh, wow.
So that's how he let up off me, and then he turned around, and that's how my son got stabbed in the face.
Jeez.
So he probably thought I was dead. And I'm thinking I'm hearing God's voice, maybe I was, but because he let up off me, because my 12-year-old told him my mom's not breathing, that's the only reason why he let go.
Wow.
So now we're in the hospital. Now my son is getting stitches. So my ex, now it's breaking news. It's breaking news in Detroit. So I'm sure his friends calling me, people calling me, people calling him. So he was on the run for 2 weeks. So just imagine two weeks we're hiding.
Yeah.
I can't tell anybody where we're at because we don't know where he's at.
What kind of physical condition were you in as far as stabbings? How many times did he stab you?
I walked out of the hospital with 21 cuts that I did not have the day before.
Jeez. Okay.
Yes. And I remember the doctor telling me, the doctor said that I was lucky. The doctor said, "You're lucky that that knife was not really sharp, what he probably thought it was."
Right.
But even when I talk about the stab wounds, I tell him, like, look, he choked me. And that's how he would take how I believe I was going to die. By him choking me. But a lot of the scars you really can't see. You can see some, like on my arm, on my hand. You really can't see them that much. But like I said, the nerves is cut, so I feel it
right
every day in my hand.
Right.
And a lot of were defensive wounds, like in my hand, because I had my hand up to my face. For some reason, I don't know why he was trying to go towards my face.
Well, he probably didn't want anybody else to want you. I guess he figured if he couldn't have you, he'd disfigure you so no one else would want you.
Yes. Yep. So he did. So he finally turned himself in. And so he was convicted of attempted murder and felonious assault against a minor. So he was sentenced to 12 to 40 years.
Okay. Now, is he still locked up? What, how much time did he serve, or has he served already?
He served already. So he served his 12 years, and now he's living in Arizona.
Wow. Now, do you ever hear from him at all?
Yes, I do.
You
hear
do?
From him. I do.
How does it make you feel? What's that, that conversation like?
You know, I had to let it go. I really, because while he was in prison, I felt like he still had control over me. Because I was still angry, even from the time when he turned himself in, before we even went to trial, I was so upset, and it was in my mind every day, well, this is what I'm going to say, this is what I'm going to do, so it was still control, it was controlling me, so I had to, like, let it go, because I needed my mind back, because I was so mad, so even when we went to trial, and it was time for, when he got convicted, and it was time for his sentencing, I talked to, you know, how we can talk to the judge during
right.
sentencing.
Right.
And I told the judge, I said, you know, of course I want him to get time for what he did, but I'm really hoping that he gets help, like mental help, while he's in there. And the judge told me, she was like, out of all the years on the bench, she's never heard anyone say anything nice about the person who attacked him.
Trying to kill you.
Right. And yeah. Mama, I still wanted him to get help because I felt like it was mental. And maybe because I knew a lot of stuff that he went through, you know, and a part of me still a little bit felt sorry for him. You know, his mother died, his grandmother died, he really didn't know his father. So he had a lot of issues that was going on with him. So I really wanted him to get the therapy and things that I felt that he needed. But once he got out, I figured, yeah, he didn't get the help. He still says things and does things to try to push my buttons again.
So why does he have access to you in any capacity? Why do you have any conversations with him at this point? Is it because of your child? Is that the reason why you do? Or you just, I don't understand.
And it is for my child. And in my mind, I was thinking that I was doing it for my son. Like, my son just recently graduated.
Okay.
And we invited his dad. So I'm thinking like, okay, well, you know, we're okay because we have spoke on the phone a few times throughout the years because, you know, child support issues, things like that. So we have spoken over the phone. So I'm thinking he's a changed man. I'm thinking, okay, he went to prison. He served his time, that he's changed. You know, 12 years, I figured, was maybe he had enough time to really think about what he did, and maybe he's really sincere and sorry. So I really was thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe we can have some type of conversation or something, because now, you know, you didn't miss 12 years of your son's life. So I'm thinking I'm giving him a chance to have that relationship with his son. But I made sure that I asked my son, did he want to have
That's what I was going to ask. Did he want to have a conversation? Did he want to have a relationship with his father?
A part of him did.
Right.
But I think over the time, as he saw how the conversations were going between me and his dad, it was to the point like he really didn't care anymore. Like now, I don't believe he'll ever have a conversation with his dad again.
Right. I guess so. I think when people go to prison, I mean, I've not been in prison, but it seems like from people that I know who have been in, you come out one of two different ways. You either come out contrite, having rehabilitated, wanting to redeem yourself and your life, or you either become hardened and more calculated and trying to figure out how you're going to, you know, perform your next scheme or hurt the person that got you there. And so if he has not been rehabilitated, he has not gotten, you know, emotional help, are you concerned at all that maybe you just need to, like, you know what I mean? Because you can sit in prison for 12 years and brood, and your anger can fester if you're not trying to go in the other direction, right? So he can come out more angry than he was before he went in with you because he's there. Have you considered that or have taken steps to completely get him out or keep him out of your life?
Well, now I have, but when he got out, I mean, things were fine. You know, he seemed like he was really trying to get his life together.
Right.
Our conversations were okay, you know, so I'm really thinking that he's changed. So what made me realize that he didn't change was just a few months ago, like maybe about 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. It was on social media. It was a post. I put a post on there saying that I want to be an advocate, which I am an advocate for domestic violence, but I say that's really what I'm about to really focus on because I started doing other things and I was talking about my mission in life, my purpose in life, and my calling.
Right.
So I put on social media that I'm really about to start back really advocating and being the voice for women who have been abused.
Right.
Now, me and him, we're not even Facebook friends. So next thing I know, about 10 minutes later, I look on my post. So he done wrote like maybe 4 or 5 long comments, not just up under what I wrote, but what under other people wrote. And he was saying, oh, she's not a victim. She's never been abused. She's lying. So I was just like, oh my gosh, how dare him, first of all, come on my page and write that. And how can he say I've never been abused when you were convicted of attempted murder?
Cetra, this man should not have any access to you in any way, shape, or form. He shouldn't be able to see your Facebook posts under, you know, you should block him from. I'm just saying. It just seems to me that you've been a little bit too lax in keeping this man away from you.
I have.
You know what I mean?
You're right. I have.
Yeah.
But I have blocked him recently. I have blocked him. I called his friend, his best friend again, and I just told him, I said, tell him to leave me alone. I blocked him on all social media platforms.
Good.
And his friend even called him and was like, you know, went off on him like, look, she still was trying to be nice to you. They invited you to the graduation and you're still acting a fool towards her. So I think even his friends are really still like now just probably done with him because they see like, look, I've been trying to tell y'all this for years.
Right. So since that time, you have done some things to help many, many, many other women, which is an amazing thing to me. And the most amazing thing is how you've turned this whole thing around. So tell me about that. Tell me about your advocacy. Tell me about what you've done as far as building a company and a brand. How did that work for you? How did that start?
Oh, wow. Well, in 2012, I left Michigan and I moved to Texas. And so it was just me, my 12-year-old. We piled up whatever we could fit in the car and we hit the road and came to Texas. I knew one person here in Texas. I just wanted to start, you know, over because I just was, you know, tired of Michigan. So I came here to Texas, and when I came to Texas, like I said, I knew one person. So I came here, I started working, I ended up doing opened up an insurance agency. I was like, I'm fine, I'm good. You know, no one don't know my story, no one know what I went through. And then one day I went home and I saw on the news, it was something happened, I believe in Plano, where an ex-husband killed his ex-wife and some friends. They were watching TV, like a basketball or a football game.
Okay.
And I heard God's voice and was like, it's time to tell your story. Because when I was looking at that story, I felt it. Because I'm like, oh my gosh, that could have been me. You know, because I didn't tell people what was going on. What if my ex-husband would have killed innocent people because they didn't know what was really going on with me and
right.
him?
Right.
So I just like, okay, it's time for me to share my story. So I called the owner of Southern Dallas Magazine, James Thomas, and I called him and I say, okay, well, you know, I want to share my story. And now at that time, I'm working at the church because I had a moment in my life where I was just like mad at myself, like, God, what am I doing here? You know, what is my purpose? What should I be doing? Why did I, you know, go through that? So I started working in ministry, which was so surprising because I really didn't grow up in the church, but here I am working in ministry, right?
Right.
So I called James Thomas and I'm like, okay, I want to share my story. So I end up sharing my story with him. And so I go to church one Sunday and I see people looking at me, pointing. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? I found out then that he put me on the cover of the magazine.
Oh, wow.
Okay. See, I didn't know that he was going to put me on the cover. I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to be in the magazine. So he ended up putting me on the cover. And so now women and men, they're coming up to me and they're saying, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. I mean, they're pulling up their arm sleeves, showing me this is what my boyfriend did to me. This is what my ex-husband did to me. So now they're showing me their wounds. And I'm literally in the lobby of the church. I'm like crying because I'm like, okay, I get it. I get it, God, why you told me to share my story. It's not for me. It's I'm helping other people
right.
as well, you know, with their story.
Right.
So through that, I started doing inspirational speaking, and I called it inspirational instead of motivational, is because I wanted to inspire my readers. I mean, my listeners, well, I'll get back to the readers, but I wanted to inspire my listeners because I didn't want to get up there and just share my story about what happened to me. Whenever people hear me speak, I may spend maybe about 20 minutes or so speaking about what happened, but I always talk about afterwards, what happened after that.
Right.
And so I made a shirt and it's called, I put I Am Worth It on there because it was a reminder of me to let me know what am I worth. You know, I had to remind myself that I am worth love. I am worth my peace. I am worth happiness. I am, you know, worth joy. So I will call myself in uniform when I get up and speak. So other women will start saying, okay, well, you know, I want one as well. So that's how the whole clothing brand came about. So I have an inspirational clothing brand where it's about positive self-worth. So I have those sayings on the shirts. I am worth love. I am worth peace. I am worth happiness. And so that's how the clothing brand came about. But as these women and men start coming up to me, I realize everyone has a story. And I realized that their story may not be like mine, but we all have a story. So I started Your Worth It magazine. So Your Worth It magazine is where I share inspirational stories. And in my hopes that the readers will be inspired by someone else's story. Because we never know what someone else is going through.
That is correct.
And you don't have to be a survivor of domestic violence. You know, maybe you're fighting depression, or you're trying to overcome grief, or whatever it is. I'm sure that we all have been through something where we can use that to help someone else.
Right. Do you have a podcast, or I know that you had one. Are you thinking about doing it again?
I am. I'm thinking about doing it again in 2024. I stopped the podcast when COVID hit because I was going into the studio broadcasting. But after COVID, I haven't went back, but it's something in my heart that I do want to get back into doing. But right now, I really want to focus on speaking more.
Okay.
And I've also created an online course where I actually want to help women, and men. I don't want to keep saying women, women and men, to transform their story. So transform their story into helping someone, whether it's through a book. I've written a book called You're Worth It. Whether if they want to do a blog or a magazine or a t-shirt, whatever it is, I think we all should be doing something where we can be inspiring and helping someone else.
Are you dating now, Cetra?
I have been dating, but I'm not dating anyone now. But my hopes is that I will find, you know, someone that's for me. Because I do want to get married again. I think marriage can be a beautiful thing. I just pray that I marry the right person for me next time.
Right. So I guess I ask, because when you consider someone now, when you go out with someone now, are you looking for anything that you think you may have missed previous to this with your ex-husband? Are you looking for signs or flags or language that would let you know that, okay, this guy... He might not.
I mean, if I do see signs and I'm like, okay, but I try not to base it on what I've been through with someone else.
Okay, that's fair.
So every guy that I date, I started off from, okay, it's the beginning. It's a new beginning. So whatever sign that I feel from them, that's the sign that they gave me.
Gotcha.
That they gave me. So if they're abuse, like let's say if they hit me, I can't say, oh, well, you're just like my, you know, ex-husband. No, I'm basing on what that person did to me. Okay. So, yeah, you did this.
I got you. I hear you.
So, yeah. I don't know, dating, when you said dating, I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is that? But, yeah.
No, I just... You know, when you have a near-death experience from someone that you loved and who claimed to love you, I would think it would make you gun-shy for a while about the dating process, or maybe even turn you off or sour you about the whole marriage experience. But so how do you get back on that horse other than, I guess, just get back on that horse? And when you do that, if the horse bucks a little bit, do you just jump right back off, or do you just ride it out? You know what I mean? I'm just trying to figure out, are you a little gun shy? Are you a little nervous now when you're dating? Is there anything that goes through your mind reminiscent of what you've gone through before that makes you say, no, thank you?
I'm hopeful. You know, it's funny because I kind of like negotiate with God a little bit. I'm like, I really want to know what love feels like true love.
Right. Right.
So I really want to know what it feels like. So it's like I'm excited in a way, because I'm believing that I can have it. So I'm looking forward to it. But wow. I just haven't had it. So I'm believing, yes, because I do want to, you know, fall in love and have someone that really loves me.
Right. I understand.
And I'm believing that it's going to happen one day.
Well, I hope it does for you. I mean, you've paid your dues. You certainly deserve it. And I hope it happens for you. How can people find you? How can they find you and purchase your merchandise and your book? How does that work? How can we find you?
I do have a website. I'm currently working on it now, but it's still live, but it's going to look totally different within the next couple of weeks. But my website is SetraStevenson.com. And on there, you can find the link to the book. The book is on Amazon. It's called You're Worth It. Go after your dreams and achieve the impossible. The clothing brand is I Am Worth It Store. But all of that has links off the Setra Stevenson website.
Okay. Awesome. Listen, I really appreciate you being with me here today. The time has flown by. It's been a riveting conversation. And I pray for you, and I hope that, your ex stays away from you, that you do finally, you say you have, you know what I'm saying? I'm playing Big Brother right now. You know, block him from everything. Yeah, I mean, you can forgive him. And keep it moving. You don't owe him any contact. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So
you're right.
But I pray for you in that regard, and you know, I appreciate you being strong and being strong for so many other people, okay?
Okay, well, I thank you so much for having me on your show, and I hope that your listeners will hear something, and hoping that they've been inspired to just, you know, live life on purpose because they're worth it.
Absolutely. Thank you for those words.
Yes.
Have an amazing, amazing Sunday and take care, okay?
Thank you. You too.
All right, Setra. Bye-bye. You know, well, you hear things and you always wonder when they're horrible things that people go through, like how do you make it through it? That's a perfect example of how you do it, how you turn tragedy into triumph and you turn lemon into lemonade, not just for yourself, but for others, so that if they're going through the same thing, they know exactly how to get through it and they know that they have a support group that they can turn to help them get through it. But listen, I know you hear the music, and that can only mean one thing on this show, and that means it is time for the Petty. So let's give him a call, see what the Petty's talking about today.
Good morning, Brother B. Brother B, happy Sunday to you.
Happy Sunday to you, brother. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing just great, man. I'm doing fantastic.
Yeah? What you got for me this week, brother?
Well, before I get into the NFL, and I'm telling you, I had a dismal week. It was just horrible. There's a lot of upsets going on. First of all, let me say congratulations to the Baltimore Orioles for a wonderful season. I'm very disappointed that they didn't make it past the division round, but I am happy to say that Baltimore has baseball again.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That team has something to build on. You know what? I'm kind of glad that they only went as far as they did because now they know that they have something to build on. They know what their talents are. They know they can just go far. You know, they can compete with anybody in the American League. And I'm really happy for them. Like I said, I'm a little disappointed, but you know what? They had a fantastic season.
They won over 100 games. Over 100. That's a huge, huge season. When you went over 100 games.
It is. And it's a big leap from where they were last year. But I could kind of see it last year. I came to a couple of games last year. I was excited to see him. I was happy to see him this year when I came down to Baltimore to see him. And, I mean, they're back to being my favorite team in baseball.
Oh, you wow.
Know, I've always been a Yankee fan.
Yeah,
I'm back on the Oriole bandwagon.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I love those O's.
Well, you know what I hope? I hope something. I'm sorry to cut you off. But I hope something happens that you talked about early in the season. I hope that now that Baltimore knows that they have a good team, that they will support them from the jump and not just jump on at the very last minute. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's what my problem was with the fans in Baltimore because, like I said, I came down to a couple of games and I was very disappointed to see how the stadium just wasn't full.
Right.
It wasn't as full as I thought it should have been for a team that was doing so well.
Right, right.
Now, during the playoffs, yes, they came down to Camden Yards. They supported the O's, but they should have been doing that when they started seeing that the O's were catching fire. Once they caught the Tampa Bay Rays and took over first place, they should have been filling that stadium up every, if not every day, every weekend.
Right.
And I was disappointed because I came down there on a Friday and a Saturday to watch a couple of games, and it was just disappointing to see all the empty seats there.
No, I hear you. You definitely said something about it. I remember.
Now, speaking of baseball and speaking of the Orioles, you know what? I really was hoping for I-95 World Series with the Orioles and the Phillies.
Right.
I was even hoping for the two best teams in baseball to duke it out in the World Series, and it's not going to happen because for the second straight year, the Atlanta Braves have been bounced in the divisional round by their divisional rivals. the Phillies. And Atlanta was the best team in baseball this year.
Yeah, they were.
So they had over 100 wins. And this is their second consecutive year where they've had over 100 wins, and they were bounced by the same team, their division rival.
Wow.
So the two best teams in baseball this season are out.
Gone. Gone.
And speaking of something's weird in the American League, it'll be an all-Texas ALCS. It's Houston, Astros, Texas Rangers. We'll find out which one of those teams will be going to the World Series. And here's a side note. This is Houston's seventh consecutive ALCS.
Right.
7 years in a row, the Astros have been going to the ALCS. What's going on down there in Houston?
You know, I don't know. Has the cheating stopped? I mean, I don't know. But I will say this.
That's a good question.
I will say this. A man that needs to get his roses while he's still over the dirt is Dusty Baker.
I agree with you 100%.
He needs to
I've been a Dusty Baker fan since he took over the Washington Nationals.
Yes.
I was a Dusty Baker fan when he was up in San Francisco with the Giants, and now he's doing it down in Houston. So, yes, give that man his flowers.
Absolutely. You know, one of the reasons why the Nationals could not keep Bryce Harper was because of the firing of Dusty Baker. He loved Dusty Baker. And when they let Dusty Baker go, he knew he didn't want to be a part of the organization anymore.
Exactly. And he's with an organization right now that loves him, and the city of Philadelphia loves him.
Absolutely.
And he loves the city of Philadelphia. He's like a Philly guy.
Yeah, he is.
It's like he's been here forever. Baseball, World Series. You know what? Let's see if we can have Houston and the Phillies again doing a rematch from last year.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be something special. So moving right along. The hockey season has started, and you know who I'm going to be looking to have my eyes on.
Who's
you know
that?
Who I'm going to be looking at.
Oh, Las Vegas, the Knights.
Vegas Golden Knights. So it's only game one started earlier this week, and we got a long way to go. So we're not going to talk about hockey until we get to maybe about March or April. But I will be having my eyes on those Golden Knights out of Vegas.
Okay, okay.
You know, I heard a little rumor, so I'm going to give you a little something, just something really quick on the NBA. The reigning MVP of the NBA may request a trade. That's what the world on the street said. The world on the street is that Joel Embiid will ask for a trade from the Sixers this year.
Crazy.
That's what the world on the street is. So maybe because a new coach is coming in, maybe because, you know, the situation with Harden, maybe because he doesn't feel like they can put players around him that can help him on the chip. But the word has it that he may request a trade out of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know that Harden's trying to get out of Philly. I know that he's talking. Well, he wants to get out of Philly. He can't stand
he kind of fell out with the president of the company. He called him a liar. You know, some promises were made that were broken. So, and Harden and Embiid have a very good relationship.
Right.
And so I think if Harden goes, and Harden really does not want to be in the organization as long as Daryl Morey is there. So Embiid's probably feeling like, well, if Harden's not going to be here, I don't want to be here either.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but the rumors are circulating all around Philadelphia that may be going down.
Okay.
Now we're going to jump to the NFL, because quickly approaching is the NFL deadline, and we may start seeing some familiar faces in new places.
Okay.
A lot of teams need help at defensive positions. So I think there's some quarterbacks that might be getting called up or getting phone calls to go to some teams. Some things are going to start happening, and there are going to be some surprises. Speaking of surprises, it shouldn't be a surprise. Russell Wilson's done. Thank you, Russell Wilson and the Broncos, for helping boost my Thursday night record back to 4-2. Speaking of my record, seeing I had a dismal 7-7 last week, I'm at 49-29. But yeah, I think Russell Wilson is done. I mean, come on, that Bronco team looks horrible.
Yeah,
and
they did.
The word has it that the Broncos may be breaking that team up. There may be a whole lot of people from their team placed on the auction block to be traded.
Yeah, well, their DBs and their corners are horrible, bro. Their linebacking core is horrible. I mean, I don't beat up on Russell a whole lot because he does put points on the board. It's not like he's throwing goose eggs every single week.
Oh, back that up. Pump your brakes, Brother B. How many points did they put up Thursday night?
Nah, I don't know, man.
Eight? Yeah, that's horrible. Yeah, so don't talk about Russell Wilson putting points on the board. Russell Wilson's done. He's cooked. Speaking of done and cooked, Robert Kraft is just about at the end of his rope with Belichick. I told you that last week. That was a game that they had to win. It was an ugly game.
Right.
Vegas pulled it out. Belichick may be done. And we'll talk about who New England will be playing this week. So let's get on to the picks.
Okay.
As I said last week, Kansas City would be an easy winner over Denver, and that's what they did. And speaking of football, right now, as you and I speak, your Bum Burris, those Baltimore Ravens, are across the pond playing the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
Now, before I give my pick, let's talk a little bit about Baltimore and going across the pond. Several years ago, they went across the pond to play a bum team in Jacksonville. They were blown out. You know why? Because they hesitated and waited until it's time for them to go over to London.
Yeah.
They should have gone the same time Jacksonville went. They went 2 days after Jacksonville, and they were blown out. So let's see if Harbaugh and the crew decided, hey, let's go over there early this year. Because if they put up the same type of showing that they did several years ago, we already know they made their plane reservations late again. And hopefully they learned from that lesson several years ago. Let's go over to London several days early.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and I hope their receivers packed their hands with them. Because look at that, they had a bunch of stone hands last week.
Yeah, they did.
And I told you, Brother B, that Mike Tomlin and those guys from Steel City were going to beat the those bum birds from Baltimore.
The birds beat themselves.
I told you. Listen, the Ravens it doesn't beat matter.
They it beat
does
themselves.
Not matter if they beat themselves. They lost in the Steel City, just like I told you they were.
Yeah, okay. Now, whatever, man.
Let me bring it down a notch and let's go to the picks. Your bum birds should pull out a win against the Titans. They are a better team. If the receivers pack their hands with them to go across the pond, give me the bum bird Ravens against the Titans.
Leave my Ravens alone.
Moving right along, the Commanders travel down to the ATL to see the Dirty Birds.
Right.
And, you know, I am highly disappointed in that team, the showing that they gave against the Bears. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they didn't show up.
Are you kidding me?
They played a dismal
game. Are you serious? At home against the Bears?
Yeah, they played a dismal game.
That's an understatement. But you know what? Do I think they have a bounce back day today? Nah, I don't think so. Give me those Dirty Birds from the ATL.
Okay.
Minnesota, who I thought they were. I told you I didn't believe in Kirk Cousins. But you know what? The Bears are all happy. They won their first game last week, and they are hosting those Norsemen from Minnesota. But I don't think Justin Fields and the Bears are going to have it today. So give me the Vikings over the Bears. Next up, Seattle travels across the country to see the Cincinnati Bengals. Maybe Cincinnati has turned the corner. Jamar Chase is starting to do his thing. If they can keep Joe Burrow upright, they might start make some noise in the AFC North. Give me the Bengals over the Seahawks.
Okay.
Next up, this is an easy pick, but it might be a trap game. Carolina goes down to South Beach to see the Dolphins. And the reason why I said it might be a trap game because Carolina's winless. But they put up a fight against a lot of games they were in, they just were losing.
Right.
And Miami has been just doing their thing. This should be an easy pick for anybody. The point spread is in double digits. But you know what? Every now and then, you have that type of game where this happens. Do I think it's going to happen today? Absolutely not. Give me the Dolphins over the Panthers.
Okay.
Let's stay down in Florida as those pesky Lions go see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Man, that's going to be a good one. You got two teams with only one loss. They're both doing their things in their divisions. And I had a hard time deciding who I really like in this game. But you already know who I like in this game. Give me those pesky Lions over the Buccaneers.
Okay. All right.
And like I said, we're staying down in Florida. Florida's going to have a big day today. They have three teams playing at home because the next team will be Jacksonville. They will be hosting the Indianapolis Colts.
Who you got?
Yes. Man, from what I understand, the Colts will be getting their running back today. He's coming back. He's going to play for them. They'll set all the other stuff later. But I like Dougie and the boys. So give me the Jaguars over the Colts.
Okay.
And finally, on the 1 o'clock slate, those guys from the Golden Gate City, the only other undefeated team the only team that's been averaging 30 points a game every game and really showed up and
okay,
showed
man.
Up on the
All
big
right.
stage
okay.
last Sunday night.
Hey.
You saw it.
All
everybody
Petty.
Saw it.
Okay.
They beat them boys down. Yeah. I know you want me to get on with the pick. Give me those 49ers over those crusty Browns. I can't say too much about them boys. Let me tell you something, Brother B. Don't be surprised if you see me in the Super Bowl.
Let me tell you something real quick. If the Browns beat the 49ers, I'm calling you personally. I'm telling you right now.
Oh,
I'm going to make you miserable.
I'm pretty sure you will. Let me tell you something. I will be very humbled if they go up in Cleveland and lay a big old... I mean, I just cannot see Deshaun. Watson's not playing. The Browns, they are who they are. And we're talking about, hey, did you watch that game Sunday night? You
yes,
probably
I did.
Didn't.
Yeah,
you
no,
should
I watched
have.
It. I watched.
But let me tell you something. They were fried. This is supposed to be Dallas. We're not talking about some bum team. We're talking about Dallas, who they destroyed. Brother B, come on now. Come on. Dallas been wanting that game since last year's playoffs. And I even said, I was surprised. I thought the 49ers would pull it out, but I did not expect to see that type of beatdown.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? You'll be a believer in January, moving into February. And so let's move right along. New England goes out to Vegas to see the Raiders. I think they need this game. The Patriots really need to win this game. I was not impressed on how the Raiders played the Packers last week. I think the Packers gave them that game. So I like the Patriots still trying to save Bill Belichick's job. So give me the Patriots over the Raiders.
Okay.
Next up, we have a good divisional game. And a lot of people might not see it this way, but I kind of like what the Cardinals are doing. I don't think they're laying down. I don't think they're tanking. And they travel out to L.A. to play the Rams. The Rams, you can take them or leave them. But today I'm going to take them. I like the Rams over the Cardinals.
Okay.
And the last game on the 4 o'clock slate, well, actually 4:25, will be those Philadelphia Pigeons, those Eagles, going up I-95 to play J-E-T-S, Jets. I think Philly probably played their best game so far this season last week. And to me, the Jets are still just a big question mark.
Okay.
I think this would have been a better game if Aaron Rodgers was playing. He's not. But, the Jets didn't play too bad last week.
All right.
I don't think this is going to be a walk in the park for the Eagles, but I do believe that they will win. Give me Philly over the Jets.
All right.
And tonight, a New York kind of thing. We got the Giants going up into Buffalo. They gave the wrong money. They gave the money to the wrong guy.
Yes, they
I've
did.
Said it before.
Yes,
Daniel Jones is just horrible.
Absolutely.
Danny Dimes are like Danny Pennies. He's horrible.
Yep. And Saquon Barkley's hurt.
And let me tell you something. Buffalo, man, I think they did what the Ravens did. Waited and took their time going across the pond last week because Jacksonville, who stayed over in London, was ready for them.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. Oh, man. But tonight, hopefully they came back early, got themselves together, and I think tonight they will handle their business and they will be the kings of New York tonight. Give me the Bills over the Giants.
Okay.
And tomorrow night, them boys, and when I say them boys, they look like little boys last week, they'll be traveling to L.A. to play the Chargers. Now, you know what? I'm looking for a bounce back game because they were highly embarrassed last week on the big stage. The Chargers, I'm still just not feeling them. They have a lot of talent. I just don't like the coach. I don't like some of the decisions he make. And, I don't know, Brother B. I'm just not sold on those Chargers. But I think Dallas has something to prove tonight. And because I don't like them, I'm not going to pick them. I'm going to go with the Chargers.
Okay. All right.
And like I said, Brother B, I'm really not all that sold on the Chargers. I just think they have a better chance of winning, mainly because they're at home. And the Cowboys, man, I'm still in shock behind what I saw last week. I'm happy I saw it. I'm just still in shock behind it. Finally, so I'm not being missed in my duties. Thursday night, I think it's going to be a good one. Jaguars, Saints in New Orleans. Wow. I like the Jaguars going down to the Big Easy and handling some business.
Okay.
So on Thursday night, let's look for the Jaguars to defeat the Saints.
Sounds good, brother.
And hopefully my record will be a whole lot better than what it was last week. And on that note, Brother B, I got to get out of here. I got to give you some things real quick so I can sit down and watch the rest of these games. Talk to you next week.
All right, man.
Hopefully I will not be hearing that phone call from you because my boys will be handling their business in Cleveland.
Oh, you're going here.
I'm out of here, Brother B. Peace.
All right, man. Out. All right, well, there you have it. You've got your picks. You've got your reasons for picking based on the Petty's information. Hey, put your money where his mouth is. You'll earn more than you lose. I can almost guarantee it. But that's the show for today. Time has flown by. I want to thank my guest, Cetra Stevens. Always a pleasure to listen to somebody who's on the upside of a bad situation. And she has completely turned it around, and she has made a positive not just for herself, but for others, and that's an amazing thing. Please reach out to her if you know someone that is struggling after going through something like she's gone through, or if you're going through struggles with yourself and coping with something that you've gone through like that. She's not a therapist. She'll tell you straight away she's not, but she does have great information on how to get help and how to get support to help you get through what you're going through. And if you are currently in a situation where you're suffering domestic violence and abuse, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-7233. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There's somebody there waiting to help and talk to you. You are definitely not alone. Also, thanks to the Petty for being with me this week and every week like he always is. He always has my back, and I really appreciate it. And thank you for being with me today and every week that you tune in. I really appreciate you listening to me. If you have feedback, if you have any questions, or if you have any comments about the show, please reach out to me at On With Brian Pettaway on Instagram. That's On With Brian Pettaway at Instagram. I love to hear the comments, and I love to hear the feedback. If you've missed this show, or if you want to replay it for someone else, please go to voiceswired.com, check on the Let's Talk tab. All of my shows are there. They're listed from the newest to the oldest show. I'd love to know that you are listening to them, okay? And it's free, of course. All right, well, listen, have a great day today. Don't do anything. Relax. There's a lot of football going on, as we just mentioned with the Petty. Take a load off, chill, and do nothing. And as I always say, the best part about doing nothing is what? You can quit whenever you want. So wake up tomorrow morning and conquer the week. Be inspiring to others and allow others to inspire you. And I'll see you next Sunday right here, same time, 10 a.m. on 1500 Radio, Baltimore's authentic multimedia experience. Have a great Sunday, people. Peace.